So recently I had a conversation with Dr. Tom about various topics in health, starting with a conversation around, do people spontaneously heal? I've split this into two podcasts, so I hope you enjoy. Different episode today for the Ask Dr. Gill podcast. I am really excited to have one of my mentors and friends on the show, Dr. Dick Tom, who I've talked about on the show in the past. And Dr. Tom has been practicing medicine for a very long time. He's a naturopathic physician, 2 degrees, not just one, but two, and also practices a dentist for a long time as well. So has that aspect, but really what Dr. Tom is, he's been a mentor to so many people in the naturopathic and actually even in the allopathic community. Lives in Scottsdale now and has a clinic down there. The American Center for Biological Medicine. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we call it Biomed Scottsdale now, but same idea, same thing.
Yeah. And is a fantastic physician. So welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me.
Well, it's a real pleasure, Gil, to be part of this. And I'm always excited to, you know, share whatever people are interested in learning about. And hopefully the listeners will, it'll pique their interest or make them think perhaps a little bit differently, depending how our conversation goes. But that's typically what I find when I sort of join these podcasts.
Yeah. And one of the things that I forgot to mention when we were talking before is I'd done a brief podcast on biotherapeutic drainage, and who Dr. Tom, and I mentioned this in the podcast, Dr. Tom taught me about biotherapeutic drainage. So pretty much everything I know about it comes from Dr. Tom. So not quite, but probably like 99% of it. So. But I think that, you know, where I wanted to start, because I do think this is related, is a conversation we had, I don't know, 25 years ago, which was about how come people do not spontaneously heal? Do they spontaneously heal? And if not, why, you know, why do they? Why don't they? And I've talked about this on the podcast before. So go ahead and, yeah, let's answer that. We'll start there and see where it goes.
Okay. Well, you know, just as a starting point of that and just to make a generic statement about healing, you're right. I've been practicing medicine over 50 years now. And, you know, one of the things that I have seen, so literally I practice over 6 decades of time. So I have seen a lot of things in medicine come and go. And what's interesting, what I found interesting is that when I started practicing in the 1970s, you know, there we everybody basically who had a problem either, and you couldn't diagnose it, was said to have blood sugar problems or adrenal problems. And then in the 80s came along the idea of the William Crook, the yeast connection, and then everybody had yeast and everybody had fungus and that kind of thing. And then the next decade, it became fibromyalgia and it became chronic fatigue. And then a little bit later in the decade, everybody had Lyme disease. And then everybody after that, everybody had celiac disease. And then after that, everybody started having problems with mold sensitivity. And now everybody has a sort of a mast cell histamine problem because they react to everything in general. And it has microplastics in their body and in their brain. And yet, when you really break down to the common denominator of every decade, every problem, it's the same problem every time. We just have a new name on it, because what it simply comes down to is the inside of your cells, your organelles, we'll call them, the areas that produce all the important features of health, Are they getting enough nutrients? Are they getting enough electrons? Are they getting what each cell needs in order to perform adequately?
Right.
And so, you know, very often, you know, people come to us as physicians and they have a specific complaint. I have a migraine headache, or, you know, I have digestive problems, or I have rheumatological problems, or I can't sleep, or my energy isn't. And they're looking for, well, what's the problem? And what they think is the problem is we'll do a lab test or we'll do some type of a test and find the problem. But the reality is those won't tell you what the problem is. The real problem is why have we not learned? Why haven't we not been taught? Why has the medical system been such that it hasn't really taught us what it is that we need to do for ourselves? And the simple aspect of healing, from my perspective, are you following the laws of nature? Mother Nature is all-knowing. Mother Nature has the answers. Mother Nature has provided the answers. But medicine has gone to a point of trying to, divert itself from, you know, the obvious types of things that we need to do. And so there's 8 billion people on this planet, and all 8 billion of us have more or less the same physiology. In fact, we're basically all the same when we look at from a physiology perspective of, you know, if it doesn't matter what age or how you are, whether it's a baby who's just born or somebody who's 100 years old and everybody in between, if you ask how their pancreas is working, it's supposed to be working the same in all people. Doesn't right. matter your color, how tall you are, what sex you are, et cetera, what your religious belief is or what your, you know, cultural, it's all the same. So genetically, we're all the same with very minor differences as far as hair color and height and skin color, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So basically what I have found health-wise, you know, can people heal spontaneously? 100% they can heal spontaneously. But the key is, are you following natural laws? Are you doing what the body requires in order to be able to heal itself? And right. what does that mean? It means, are you getting adequate amounts of nutrients? Meaning, what are your diet choices? What are you actually eating? Are you getting adequate levels of hydration? And the vast majority of people don't. When we do, you know, our in-office testing, is that the vast majority of people are actually dehydrated, or even if they have enough water, and theoretically our body full body weight should be over 50% should be water, and a man it should be about 60%. But where is the water? Is it in the right compartment? And I have rarely seen, other than maybe an Olympian, that the water is in the right compartment, meaning 2/3 of the water is inside the cell and only 1/3 of the water is outside the cell, which basically is a physiologic balance. Right. And so when as you get closer to approaching the proper nutrients, the proper hydration, what that then permits is that the cell membrane, that is sort of the barrier for getting things inside the cell and moving things out, doesn't have the proper electrical charge on it. And back in the 1930s, Warburg, who won a Nobel Prize, basically discovered or talked about the idea that a healthy cell has a charge on that cell membrane of about -50 to -120 millivolts. And yet when he measured unhealthy cells, especially cancer cells, those cells had a charge of about -15 millivolts. So a huge difference. And in fact, a -15 millivolt cell will never be able to reproduce a healthy cell.
Right.
And if it can't reproduce a healthy cell, well, there's no possible way you could heal, per se.
I'm just going to interject here, because I'm guessing listeners are going to wonder, is there a test that you have in your clinic for the water and the cells and the millivolts, or is there something that they can do at home?
No, it's a bioimpedance analysis, which perhaps some gyms may have some type of a component of that, or your physical therapist may have that. That's a pretty standard test. It takes 3 to 5 minutes. It's basically electrodes that runs a very slight current through your body, and it's measuring your body fat, your muscle mass, your skeletal mass, your bone mass, et cetera, et cetera. And that gives us a real clue as to what it is what we're looking at. The test that I use for I'll say total power is from a HRV test. The specific one that we use is Nerve Express. Uh-huh. And one of the results of that test is called TP, which stands for total power. And it's equated to, I'll say, electron charge. And so the number goes from 0 to 10,000 plus. I've actually seen athletes at 12,000, but we'll say 0 to 10,000. And so what I find in patients who are not going to spontaneously heal is that charge is usually less than 1,000. And when it's less than 1,000, I can pretty much surmise that there's no possible way that they have the proper electrical charge on their cells, which is why there's no possibility that they're going to heal without some form of intervention. Right. So people will say, well, how did people do that before we had, you know, these tests or machines? Well, we followed Mother Nature. We slept on the ground. We didn't wear insulated shoes that prevented us from being in contact with the electrical energy of the earth. So we'll say that the advent of Nike, won't blame Nike, but the advent of shoes where we covered our feet and aren't in contact enough, or we got away from gardening. We don't stick our hands in the dirt anymore. So we're not in actual contact. We're not in actual contact of the electrons that come. And obviously plant foods get their energy from the sun. We eat the plant and we get some of that sun energy by eating the food. So a diet that is needed to be multicolored to provide a wide range of phytonutrients is, I think, an essential aspect of any part of the diet. Once again, everybody on the planet needs to eat food for nutrients. We need to drink water for hydration. We need to ground our body so that we can be getting electrons. And we need sleep. Yeah, we know sleep is one of the huge problems in our society, and you know, with electric lights, and let's blame Edison for inventing the electric light bulb.
Yeah, that's good to say. Yeah,
you know, before I mean, it used to be a cave and candles and stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that about being flowing with nature. There's an exhibit. There's a museum here in Honolulu, the Bishop Museum, which is kind of a natural history museum, and one of the exhibits is the moon phases. So there's 30 in ancient Hawaiian culture, there's 30, not only 30 different moon phases recognized, but 30 different names of the moon phases. Mm. Don't ask me to pronounce them. and there are certain activities that you do with each phase and ones that you don't do. And interestingly enough, one of the moon phases, I think it's the new moon, you are not supposed to fish. And it turns out that there are fish that if you catch them at the new moon, they have neurotoxins in them that will will actually end up in your brain and can kill you.
Right.
So they figured this out. They figured this out probably because they watched people die and they were like, hey, you know, so-and-so ate the fish on the new moon. Maybe we shouldn't catch the fish on the new moon. We're so out of touch with natural rhythms at this time, that it's not just that we're not eating properly. And I guess that would be the other question is, you know, aren't nutrients just nutrients? Because that's a lot of people listening to this probably are like, well, does it matter if I get the nutrients for the food or do I take supplements? And Dr. Gill recommends supplements. I've talked about why, but I'm curious to hear your point on that.
The ideal, of course, and if we go long before the supplement industry came into place, where did people get their nutrients? And they certainly didn't get it from a pill bottle. They got it from their food. There was just a person here in Phoenix probably 3 weeks ago, 110 years of age.
Wow.
Certainly probably the oldest person. They didn't say she was the oldest person in the state, but anyway, I'm going to assume she was. So, of course, they said, what did you do? She said, well... she says, I've never been to a fast food restaurant. I grew up on a farm. We grew absolutely every piece of food that we ate. We raised our animals. Nothing was bought. My mother made everything. So, you know, you take a grain and they ground the flour. So they brew the wheat, they ground the flour, they made the bread per se. And they had a routine. They had a schedule. They would get up with the sun. They would go to bed with when the sun went down. They would milk the cows and, you know, shear the sheep and all that kind of stuff. She said, our exercise was not going to the gym. Our exercise was basically working on the farm. And she said, we didn't have social media. We rode bicycles. In fact, early on, we didn't have a car. We didn't go anywhere because there was nowhere to go, basically. And she said, I basically have continued that. And at 110, she was amazingly lucid. It wasn't like, oh, she's debilitated.
Yeah.
She was totally, there was a conversation. She was carrying on the conversation with the reporter, answering her questions. And so they basically had a birthday celebration for her. She was living in assisted living. But, you know, that's if we look back at your great grandfathers or grandfathers, that's the stories they'll tell you. Before 1953 or whatever it is, when Kroc started McDonald's, there wasn't a fast food restaurant on every corner now.
Well, that came out of the war. In fact, I have a National Geographic from 1942 I found on the coast of Oregon, this thrift shop. And it's all about food production and making things that it wasn't freeze-dried, but canned at the time. That's where Spam comes from, so they could ship it for the war effort. And then we kept that industry basically after the war. And unfortunately in terms of health and well-being. So getting back to the spontaneous healing, what percentage of people would you say either do or can do that versus needing the interventions?
Presently, of course, I have to only look at my own 50 years in medicine. If somebody's coming to see me as a patient, they're probably not in a place to be able to spontaneously heal without intervention. Otherwise, they wouldn't be coming to see me.
Right.
The other thing that you know that's different about medicine now is that especially the, you know, I'm an old. I got no hair. I'm an old guy, per se. But I was fortunate growing up that my parents actually didn't have any money. So we were quite poor. So I never went to the doctor. They couldn't afford to take me to a doctor. Right. So when I would get sick, they did what my grandmother had taught my mother, which was do hydrotherapy, get in a bathtub, do alcohol baths, do mustard blasters, do nebulizing, do steam inhalation, you know, the eyes, eat chicken soup, drink water, rest. That's how I healed. I did heating compresses. I did warming socks if I had a fever and that. And it's not that if I had broken a bone, I wouldn't have been to a doctor, but I felt very fortunate. I was never given a medication. I never took an antibiotic. I was never given an aspirin. I never took a Tylenol. I was never took a single medication out of a bottle. It was all herbal. It was all either homeopathic, energetic, or mostly hydrotherapy type therapies. And I felt very fortunate that as time went on, that I didn't have those, I'll say, interfering with my development. I ate three meals a day at home. My aunts and uncles were farmers, so we would buy a cow, we would buy a pig, we would buy 50 chickens and all that kind of stuff. And we had two freezers, and we basically ate whole food. The only thing my mother would buy at a grocery store was in the outside lane where she would buy fresh fruits and vegetables. That was it. No, there was no cans. Nothing came out of a box. She cooked, baked. She did everything. So I feel very fortunate that was my upbringing that I was exposed to. So, but that's not the present generation. That's not what my patients basically have done. Although this person wasn't my patient, but it's that type of thing.
Would you say that there's I'll say it this way, an impatience with healing with people? And that they want the symptoms to go away right away, but that actually interferes with the healing process at times.
Correct. That's correct. And it's unfortunate that And that I, you know, conventional medicine is such that, you know, one of the things conventional medicine is brilliant at is taking your symptom away without trying to address what the problem is.
Right.
Unfortunately. And so people have learned, and even to the point of, unfortunately, you know, what, 62, I think, was the first heart transplant with Bernard in South Africa or something like that. So yeah. People think, oh, well, if my heart fails, I'll just go on the heart transplant list and they'll give me a new one. Or if my liver fails, I'll get a new liver, or my kidney fails. So people think, oh, well, our parts are replaceable. And with modern medicine, to some degree, that is true. However, that's not the way it used to be.
Right. We're replacing our brains now with AI. I mean,
that's the next generation problem. 100%. That's definitely true. Yeah. Yes. So, you know, those types of issues, and you know, who knows what our next generation will be? Oh, yeah. Will our children and my grandchildren actually be able to do anything, or will AI, like, what jobs are going to be out there that AI is not going to do? They say manufacturing is going to be all AI. They're going to have robots build cars and put widgets together, and like, what are we going to do?
It's, you know, it's happened in radiology already. You know, in terms of healing, I think that, and we've talked about this, it's like, as someone is healing, we talk about the reaction to it, the healing reaction state. But I do sense a lot of times patients get very frustrated by that. They just want to feel better. And so what, I guess my question is what do you say to patients? What would you say to people listening about that? In terms of healing,
I don't think there's any doubt that as a physician, our goal is to help a person feel better. Now the question is that in order to feel better, what is it that you have to do? I mean, the old thing in the gym was no pain, no gain. So I don't necessarily believe that statement per se. However, when a person has an understanding of what the body has to do in order to heal itself, there's much more of an acceptance of, I'll say, some discomfort that you may experience in order to be able to heal. Now, that doesn't mean if you have a severe migraine and can't function, or, you know, your vision is blurred and you can't. I mean, we have to intervene somehow. There is such a thing as palliation, and there's nothing wrong with palliation, and palliation won't stop healing. You know, that's, palliation is different than something that we call suppression, which is actually stopping the reaction, which unfortunately then results in something worse. Per se. So they're, you know, I'm not anti-medication. In fact, if somebody has a severe asthma attack and they can't breathe, they better take a steroid or they're going to die. It's no use saying, oh, well, just keep breathing, you'll be fine. If you're dead, it doesn't help anybody.
It doesn't.
So, there is a time and a place where medications play an incredibly important role. The challenge is what our society has gone to is that the first sign that they have a symptom, they immediately want to take something to take the symptom away without understanding the reason that they have the symptom. So the analogy I always say in my seminars is, if you have a headache, and I'll ask the patient, what do you do? And probably the most common answer is, I take a Tylenol. I mean, I've heard that 10,000 times. So my next statement is, oh, so does that mean you have a Tylenol deficiency? And they smile and they laugh and they said, well, not really. I said, then what did you treat? I don't know. I treated the pain. Well, then isn't it better to ask why you have the pain? Is it not more reasonable to think, instead of just taking the pain away, you say, am I dehydrated? Do I need to drink more water? Do I have low blood sugar? Do I need to have my neck adjusted? Did I not sleep properly last night? Am I emotionally having to deal with something or other? So we need to ask more questions. And then when you understand what the cause is, so if your neck is stiff, you either need a massage or a chiropractic adjustment. And that will not only correct the moment, but that will correct the problem moving forward. If we treat the symptom immediately and don't ask the questions, we lose the opportunity for trying to understand what the problem is. Because if I say to somebody, well, what did you do? And their first reaction is take a Tylenol. I said, maybe you should try and drink a glass of water next time. Maybe that'll help. Or maybe you should eat something and wait 15 minutes to see if that will help before you immediately. And if it does, you have a much better information than just taking the symptom away.
Yeah.
A balance, we'll say. So another, a common one that people have, you know, when they have gastrointestinal distress is they may have diarrhea several times a day. I need to take something to stop the diarrhea. I said, well, what's causing the diarrhea? Well, I don't know. Well, then wouldn't you be interested in trying to find out what the cause is so that you can either deal with it? And I said, most common cause in this country is a virus. And in reality, it'll be done in 5 days and 90% of the time. If it isn't, it's not a virus. But as long as you are drinking enough and don't get dehydrated, it's not the end of the world.
And if it's a food poisoning, you want your body to get rid of it anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. No,
100%.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's interesting that you say that because when you were talking about dehydration, I was thinking about cholesterol tests and how there's a knee-jerk response by a lot of physicians to give statins. And oftentimes a high cholesterol on the test is dehydration. And just drinking water for a little while and making sure you're hydrated will sometimes take care of the problem.
Probably is the most common, one of the most common medications, if not the most commonly prescribed medication, that's simply prescribed based on a number, which it really has very little to do with risk and whether the person, it really is a problem or not. In fact, we also know, in addition to dehydration aspect of the statin number, if on the way to the doctor's office to have your blood drawn, something happens, you see an accident, or you know somebody runs a red light in front of you and you have a sort of a shot of a cortisol and adrenaline, that's going to raise your cholesterol level 30 points, just that, because that's the natural physiologic reaction. So, you know, so if you didn't sleep well the night before, even if you didn't eat, so you may be having a blood sugar problem, which is raising your cortisol, which immediately says, oh, you should raise your cholesterol because something's going to happen to you. So you have all these other factors that come into play, but they're never part of the discussion. When somebody says, do you really have a risk? So I have people with, you know, cholesterol's at 300. And the one that we do a coronary artery score, it's zero. We do a carotid enema score, and it's like they're totally clear. I said, doesn't matter if you have a 300 cholesterol. You don't have any plaque in your arteries. Right. This is your body making it because you're stressed or you have familial problem. Yeah. So, you know, so we have to be more investigative to really try and help people understand the true problem. Well, the symptom, not meaning you can't support it, but if you just every time, if the knee jerk is to stop your symptom, you're not going to help your physician try and figure out what the problem is.
What's going on underneath? Yeah. So thank you for joining me for this podcast. This is part one of two parts with Dr. Tom. And if you have questions or comments, feel free to send me an email to info@askdrgill.com. That's askdrgill.com. And hopefully you enjoyed this and you'll enjoy the next one. Really kind of different discussion, but along the same lines. So stay tuned. Today on Ask Dr. Gill is part two of